The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And I am...
See you later.
Hello and welcome back to MCU Later here at Post Wrestling. I am, of course, Rich Fan, joined... as always, to discuss the Marvel Cinematic Universe and everything in between with my main man, W.H. Park. W.H., how are you?
I'm good. I can't wait to talk about this movie.
I could, but as I've said from the beginning of this journey, I want to make sure that I try to keep on the brighter side of life and lean in to the challenges the Singerverse may bring me.
Hey, listen, Rich, you know what? Like, I, you know, listeners, you should just, when you hear me... come on, do these reviews. Sometimes you just got to think to yourself, hello, darkness, my old friend. Because sometimes it's going to get dark with me on air. Yeah. But anyways.
WH Dark.
That's my variant action figure, by the way.
Yes.
Coming
just
up from
the variants.
Chopped-tees.com. Dickie Bird's going to venture off into the fucking action figures. There's going to be WH Park, and then there's going to be WH.
And so we're going to bring you back into the light so you could introduce and spotlight our guest.
Yes, no stranger to MCU Later. I think when Wei was co-hosting the show, and he's been on many times with John Wang when they were doing the Marvel reviews. It's Brent Chinden. Hello, Brent. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Yes, my pleasure.
Absolutely. And I love the Galactus back there. I have him down in the basement, as WH can attest.
It's true, he does.
Which Galactus is the one that you've got, the HasLab one?
Yep.
Oh, okay. No, this is just the whatever the 3¾ line was. I skipped on the HasLab one and have kicked myself since.
Know what, Brent? We were in New Jersey for WrestleMania week. We went to this comic book store in South Jersey, across the river from Philadelphia. And when you go to this comic store, and Rich says, how much, hey, I'm interested in this Galactus Funko, right? Mm-hmm. He's looking at the variant one, right? The multicolored one, right?
Oh, like the black light poster looking one?
Yes. Yeah. Right? And the guy says, if you buy that, I'll throw in the regular version for free. Cause I we basically got this one by accident. So if you buy that one, I'll give this one to you for free. And he, of course, Rich was like, I got my car here. No problem.
Yep. And so now I have the multicolored version of Galactus, and my son in the room next door has the standing regular version.
Yeah, I want to say they overproduced that black light one, because I know the store that I work at, through Diamond, who is one of the comic book and toy distributors, we used to get like scratch and dent mystery boxes. So you like just it would just be filled with returns and stuff like that. And we got like 6 of those out of one box.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool looking one, though.
It is. If I had thought about it, I would have brought it with me today so that way he could have been featured front and center. But alas, I did not. I will next time, though. But Brent, we got some serious questions. Before we even jump into MCU news, big question we ask everyone that's been on during this mutant mayhem we've been doing leading up to Deadpool and Wolverine. What would be your name and what would be your superpower if you were a mutant in the 616?
Ooh, in the 616. So I live just north of Toronto. I think I'm going to go name-wise, mm-hmm. inspired partially by what my power set is inspired by. I'm going to go with something like the raccoon, maybe.
Okay.
It's just something that you can't kill, because my power is nigh invulnerability, like the Tick.
Okay.
So I can fall off buildings. I can have stuff dropped on me. I survive it all. I just get up and smile and say spoon and continue on my way.
I love it.
It's so like Bruce Willis in Unbreakable.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that would be probably a more serious version of it. But yeah,
nope. You keep raccoon and you keep it silly. That's what we need.
Oh, he could call himself Unraccoonable.
Ooh. Unraccoonable.
That's we're gonna have to workshop that. W.
Listen, Dickie Bird's listening to this, and he's like, I wonder if I can turn that into a T-shirt. You won't be getting any of the royalties, Brent. I'm sorry.
I assume that I signed all that stuff over once I like my face appears on the screen.
Well, we give you money for your face, but Unraccoonable. That's since I actually said that. That's mine. I'm keeping the money for that.
All right.
Now that's going to lead into the first thing I want to talk about in the MC news, because Kevin Feige is a man of his word, and I really wish he wasn't. I don't know if you guys are aware, but when Dune 2 came out, in addition to screaming Lisa Nagaib a lot, he promised that he would do his utmost to make a popcorn canister as equally unsettling as the sandworm. And mother of God, he did it with this Wolverine, mouth open, just... There's an accompanying video that Ryan Reynolds, because of course he did create it for this, that you all can seek out for those of you who are listening and not watching. It is a popcorn bowl with the top of the lid with the picture of Wolverine's mask. It looks like he's balding because there is no hair on top. It's just a wide open mouth and the underside of his tongue. And it is unsettling. It is really, I am second guessing coming to Toronto looking at this, because if I buy this, I might get stopped at the border. They may have a lot of questions.
Yeah, maybe you have to go to a second screening in Philadelphia and just buy it there.
Oh, actually, you know what? I might have to do one here in Pittsburgh. That might be the safest way.
Oh, sorry, and then Pittsburgh. Just buy apologies.
It, and then, like, in shame. Well, Philly would kind of be on the way. I could do a circuitous route. I can make it work. But, yeah, I might have to do something like that. Like, but even still, that's going to be a journey. So, Brent, thoughts on this creation?
Coming to a Pornhub video near you.
Oh yeah, this is
this is going to be so bastardized very shortly. But they knew what they were doing. Like they had said right out of the gate that it was going to be in line with the Deadpool movie universe. So my other thought was when they first said that was it was going to be some sort of Wolverine Deadpool themed popcorn bucket with like a hole cut in the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. For the
that also could have been a little awkward.
That yeah. Old trick,
yeah. I saw a couple of tweets where people had pictures of Morph, kind of doing a double take. Yeah, and I was like, oh boy, they're wild and in these streets. WH, thoughts on
well, my coworker at work showed it to me on his phone, and I just laughed. I thought it was funny. I didn't think it was real. Turns out it's real. And then I get a message from John Cena. Oh, yeah, there you go. Money shot right there. John Cena's like, you getting this? And I said, listen, I know you are. And you're probably buying two. So, you know, I probably won't buy one at the theater. I'm not a big popcorn guy anyways. So I said, listen, Cena, you come to Toronto to watch. Fuck it. You know what? He's coming before the Deadpool movie releases. So, but you know what, John? You buy two. Okay? You buy two. You hold one. For me, for the next time you come visit the fair city that does not accept Aubrey. We don't accept him here. He got cooked. He's fuck that
like
guy.
You. He's not like y'all. Yeah, behind me right now, I wanted to double check to make sure I have Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes complete with the Caesar necklace, which is very awkward because if you order popcorn out of it and then the necklace falls in, like that's disgusting. Black Panther 2, Wakanda Forever. And last but certainly not least, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
What about the Morbius?
I had never saw Morbius in the theaters. I didn't morb. You think I'm going to be morbing out in these streets, brother?
I thought you said you saw it.
No, 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 no. I said even I wouldn't see it.
I thought that was Madam Web. You wouldn't see it.
Oh, that too. Mm-mm. Can't do it. Can't live with it. Can't win with it. Can't do it. I'm going to go full Mike Singletary. Can't do it. Can't win with it. But I can win with the other piece of MCU news I wanted to bring out for you guys for discussion. And that is the arrival of he who is awesome, Mr. Giancarlo Esposito, who recently this week mentioned that fans won't predict his mystery MCU role and he'll get his own television series. And so for those of you who are unaware, WH and Mr. Esposito, especially from his appearances in the Star Wars universe now, have become quite accustomed to one another. But what are your thoughts on that, WH, as far as Giancarlo joining the ranks? And do you want to guess what character he could be playing, since he says no one will?
I won't even bother. I don't know. I honestly don't know who. If it's a television show.
Well, he said he's going to do a movie as well as be in a television show.
So he's going to, but he's not going to be the star of the movie. His character's not the star of the movie.
I don't think he gave enough detail so we could know one way or the other.
Right.
Because he's like, slick. He knows the deal.
I'm sorry, no offense to him, but I think he's of an age where they're not going to necessarily, you know, focus the entire movie around him. But I can see a television show on Disney Plus. If he's going to be in his own TV show and he's hinting that he's the star of it, I don't necessarily think that lends itself to a supervillain. Mm-hmm. I think it's got to be like a superhero character. And then I have to factor in the age. Like, he's going to be playing someone probably close to his real age in real life. So unless they're doing a Robbie Robertson, like, you know, Daily Bugle spinoff show without the involvement of Sony, I have no idea.
Well, apparently, just to kind of clear the decks, so that way when Brent answers, we can kind of get an idea too. There has been rumors through a couple of folks that he's going to be in Brave New World. So with that as a potential throw out there, Brent, any thoughts for you on Giancarlo Esposito entering the MCU? Any characters you think he naturally lends himself to in terms of gravitas?
There was a rumor floating around for a while that I think he also, like, you know, kind of pitched his name in for as him as Professor X, which wouldn't be bad, but I don't see them doing an X-Men TV show unless there's like a side show for one of the characters. And that's like, you know, X-Men's far down the line at this point of them. Like they're rushing on it now, but that's still at least probably 2 years away minimum. Like, you know, Blade is one of the easiest things in the world to put together, and they're still like taking 5-6 years to do that. So a movie and a TV show, got no idea, unless he's involved in something like not a big character, like maybe something that no idea.
No, that's fair.
And if it wasn't already cast, like, you know, Carl Lumley's character, I'm having a brain fart right now, by the way.
Oh, from Truth. Yeah,
The Truth, right? Like, I would say maybe that character, but it's already been cast. Carl Lumley played that character in Falcon the Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. So, and if it's Brave New World, I'm thinking it has to be Thunderbolt related, or, you know, or Captain America related. I don't know, like, you know, unless if he's going to star in his own TV show. I mean, you know, I, looking at the suit, I think, oh, you know, he'd make a good Scourge if he was the Scourge of the underworld. But then he's not a hero, so I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I got one more for you, because this led down a dark path, and this article came out, I want to say, a few days ago. I want to be fair to the author. Yeah, it actually came out today. Anya Yarmenko-Greenwald for The Week US put out this article that says, "What We Lose When a Talented Actor Joins the Marvel Universe." And so it's interesting because they focus entirely in this article on Marvel, not comic movies like as an entity, but just Marvel. Mm. And they highlighted, as you see, Sir Anthony Hopkins, who... he mentions right there in the bottom, they put me in armor, they shoved a beard on me, sit on the throne, shot a bill. If you're sitting in the front of a green screen, it's pointless acting it. And he talked about his role in Thor. And I noticed that this was his role in Thor, but not Thor Ragnarok. And so a lot of the quotes are kind of like to the point of proving, look what happens when these famous people do these roles, instead of let's hear from them in the totality. Because again, that's what the season is. You know, as we look around and movies that I enjoy, like Furiosa starring Chris Hemsworth, are doing not as well. Instead of it being, are we having Miller fatigue? It's, man, those darn comic movies, those darn Marvel movies are bringing down everything else, even when they're not out there. Brent, as someone who works in the industry and kind of handles business on this end, for you as a retailer, are you seeing that with folks and their reactions to comic books? Is there like this, man, if not for books, I wouldn't be reading this blood, you know, this latest crossover at Marvel War. Man, I don't want to read about Batman and Robin. I like the Tyrannosaurus Rex in the Batcave, but I feel like that's a little, you know, a little over the top.
So my shop is maybe different than others in terms of just like I'm slightly north of Toronto. Mm. Our demographics might be a little different. The movies don't seem to really change our readership or the actors in them too much. We'll get one or two people who maybe want to explore things or thought like, you know, Moon Knight, the TV show is coming out, so I'll buy up all the Moon Knight because that's how I'll put my kids through college. But on a whole, it doesn't really come out that way. We'll get like little bits of conversation, but it doesn't really stop any of our customers from buying what they like. And I don't know if we're the minority or the majority compared to other shops at this point, but it's we'll get a little conversation of like, oh, did you hear so-and-so has been cast in like the new X-Men thing? I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool. And then they'll buy their book anyway, because you know, that's what they like or what they collect, and they go on their way and I wait for the next person to bring it up.
WH, what do you think? You know, they mentioned Anthony Hopkins. They talk about the fact, one of the lines that threw me in this article was they talk about the success of, you know, Zendaya. They talk about Robert Downey Jr., Hemsworth, Scarlett, et cetera. And then they jump down and talk about how Natasha Lyonne is going to be in Fantastic Four and how she's now being thrown into a wider spotlight, which I think is embarrassing to say, given she was already in several key movies and television shows.
Well, what exactly do we lose, like as an audience? Like, I don't.
Oh,
get
her
that
argument part. Is that we lose the ability because, okay, here it is, and this is one of those like when you hire someone as a freelancer to do something, and then they're quoting someone else who's a freelancer to do something, which I would argue the cannibalization of journalism is more stark than an actor doing a Marvel role, but that's for another day. She quotes Michael Shulman from his New Yorker article, "Entire generations know Anthony Hopkins not as Hannibal Lecter, but as Thor's dad." That is not true. That is like patently not.
I would say there's an
entire generation. Let me just say, there's an entire generation that recognizes Mads Mikkelsen as Hannibal Lecter rather than Anthony Hopkins. So I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to mean. Do you know what I mean? So this is. I think this is such a bad fate. I haven't read the whole thing, obviously.
Yeah.
Right. But based on what you're saying to me, and I trust your opinion, is I think this is a bad faith article that they're just like, you know what? I actually don't like Marvel, so I'm going to say people who. Actors, good actors who star in Marvel movies are doing themselves and their fans a disservice. Listen, Anthony Hopkins got like fucking 3 boats worth of fucking a paycheck from fucking Marvel, okay? You talk about boat money? You talk about fucking Michael Caine and fucking boat money? Okay, Anthony Hopkins got a fucking boat. He got a new house in the fucking Hamptons, okay? And he has the ability to travel like private jet back and forth from fucking America to England at will. From his fucking Marvel paycheck, okay? So I'm sure he doesn't really care. Like, when he signed up for it, you think he's stupid enough? He's stupid enough to sign up for that, like, thinking, it's directed by my good friend Kenneth Branagh. It's going to be the superhero equivalent of fucking Macbeth. No, he was like, hey, what do you want me to do? Right? And it was directed by his buddy, Branagh. You know, like, mm-hmm. I'm sure he didn't have an unpleasant time making this fucking movie. He's got, like, all these great actors surrounding him. Sure, is it fucking Shakespeare? No, but I like articles like this. I just think, what's your agenda for the writers?
Here, let me read the last paragraph. But also before that, Kenneth Branagh also did one of my favorite movie series right now that's going on. That also is like a Marvel-esque, like not necessarily anthology, but I love watching him in what was it? Murder in the Orient Express. Like, and that is green screen. Do you really think they're riding a train for that movie? Like, what are we doing? And so she mentions at the end, the MCU may finally be losing steam with the public. After the genre's reign over the last decades, audiences seem to have superhero fatigue, as 2023 saw no big box office successes for Marvel. Maybe actors should grab those MCU checks while they still can.
Can I say something about that last line?
Tag in.
Is, so twofold here. Is it superhero fatigue, or is it just like the fact that movie studios have generated the idea that we don't need to go to the theater anymore? And like, has there been a big hit outside of Barbie in the last 2 years? Well, Barbie and Oppenheimer, they're very, very rare now because all the studios conditioned us the, if you don't want to go to the theater, give it 2 weeks. It'll be at home where you can rent it for cheaper and make your own snacks. And they're wondering why all of a sudden, you know, their profits are down. Like, it's just they have done it to themselves. And for whatever reason, writers like this don't seem to take that into consideration. The other thing is you ever noticed on, I would say, 80% of press junkets, an actor inevitably gets asked, would you do a Marvel movie? And they always go, the standard answer is, well, maybe if the part was right. You know why? Because actors like eating. They like having food. They like paying mortgages on their very big houses. They're not going to turn down a role before it is. And an MCU role is a lot of money.
Listen, the Marvels last year was one of the ones where Jermaine and some of our other listeners would cite as like a flop, and Deadline and Variety had all these articles. It would be like the third or fourth highest grossing movie of 2024.
Yeah.
When Deadpool and Wolverine comes out, I have thrown this question out. I threw it to our friend Sam last week, and I'll throw it to you, Brent. I think it'll make $1 billion because I think people were excited for a rated R movie starring Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman in the MCU proper, and that they trust Ryan Reynolds because he's the first gorilla member of the MCU to really exist. He basically forced Fox to release the guy. I remember watching the Comic-Con where it's like, oops, how did that get leaked on the internet? And now yeah. Fox has to leak the real, now have to, they have to put out the real thing. What do you think Deadpool and Wolverine are going to fare in this tumultuous sea of movie box office fear?
It's going to do really well. And you can tell because the other studios are now moving things away from it because they just know they're going to get trashed. So $1 billion, it's possible. Part of me wonders if those days in the theater are gone or at least postponed for now. Because like I said, like the Fall Guy, which came out three weeks ago.
Fun movie.
Yeah, lots of fun. Big action movie. You can now get it on VOD. Like they pulled the pin on it like 2 weeks in. And if you're not willing to let a movie have legs through word of mouth for a while, then yeah, your box office is going to be disappointing because everybody is just going to figure that they can wait for 2 weeks and watch it at home.
Couple of points. One is about the end of this article. There's no context. They don't talk about some of these movies were made during COVID. During the pandemic, they don't talk about the actor strike, like negating people being able to do press, like in this case, the Marvels, up until like the day before it's fucking released. There's no context. So people like say, oh, that movie's a failure because it's superhero fatigue. No, there's so many extenuating circumstances. I don't know if Marvel's lost money. I think it didn't like make Marvel think we're never gonna have, you know, Iman Vellani in another fucking project. We're never gonna have, you know Brie Larson in another project, and whoever else is in this, anyone else associated with Captain Marvel or the Marvels ever do anything ever again, because it's like, you know what, it probably made the money to some extent. Was it a success? Guess what, a lot of things made during COVID aren't super successful necessarily. The last Mission Impossible movie was not, I don't think it was a success, because honestly, and I love the series, that wasn't a, it wasn't a very good installment of that series. And I think part of it has to do with the fact that, you know, now, you know, like it was made during COVID. There was a lot of things working against that film, but no one wants to talk about that. Oh, it's superhero fatigue. The last thing you want, you talk about like the Fall Guy going straight to VOD after what, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. There's a movie that had Henry Cavill in it. I saw all this press for it, and then I like found out it's not even coming out in theaters. It's just going straight to fucking Prime or something. It's gonna have like one week of release in the United States only. I couldn't even get a chance to see it in Canada in theaters.
The Ministry, was that the Guy Ritchie one?
Yeah, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Yeah, I don't even hear anything about it. I have to go search if it's on Prime now, because I really actually want to watch it.
It's really good, and I was gonna see it, and something happened, and I didn't realize that's what it was, and then it was gone. And I was just so angry because I wanted to see that. Because I love Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill was probably one of the actors you just talked about, Mission Impossible, that I really respect because he does anything. He isn't just going to typecast himself as big man go brr. Like he isn't just Superman. Like a lot of his roles are pretty fun. I liked him playing Sherlock Holmes with Enola Holmes on in that series. Heck, you talked about Mission Impossible. I don't know if you guys were aware of this, but Skydancer, which is Tom Cruise's production company, is trying to buy Paramount. And that's one of the reasons. He doesn't want the restrictions anymore of, if I'm going to have my dime in this, I want the whole dollar instead of having to deal with the percentages on the back end, which he was a genius for using. But now he wants it all, which is kind of scary because Tom Cruise in charge of the Paramount backlog would be, whew. But that's what it's coming down to. We have a message in the forums, forum.postwrestling.com, that brings up Marvel's loss of the X-Men, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But what do you guys think? Like, with this change in landscape, I think Brent brought up the point quite well of 2 weeks in and 2 weeks in out. How do we handle this? I think about like American football. I'd rather sit and watch on my HD TV and eat snacks that I have and enjoy not having someone spill beer on me than have to pay for parking. Like in Christmas, we're going to go see the Chiefs versus the Steelers here in Pittsburgh. And that's going to still be about $250-$300 just to get in. And I'm like, I could just watch it. But my wife and my son are like, we can go. It's like, it's a lot. And so same thing with the movie. I went in Birmingham, Alabama while I was working to go see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And there was a dude next to me with his family. And the oldest teenager had his cell phone. And every time, it was like an old man. Every time his phone rang or his he got a text, the lights would come out on the bottom of the phone. And about 10 minutes, I was like, you know what? Forget this. I'm not spending my birthday watching a movie while I have like a light show going on where it's supposed to just be a freaking movie theater. And that's what people are facing. There's just this rudeness from everybody else. It's kind of like pro wrestling. Can you convince me to sit next to someone I don't know and I might not like to watch this awesome thing in front of me on the screen?
Well, I mean, I'm like Dune Part mm-hmm. 2, that had legs. It's very successful. It did very well, right? I enjoyed seeing that as sneak peek in a full theater, but then I also enjoyed seeing it for the fifth time pretty much by myself in a matinee. Like, and I'm going to enjoy watching it at home in the comfort of my own lounge chair and shit. You know what I mean? Like, I like the whole experience. If I can see a movie with a friend, I will go see a movie with a friend. Like, I try to avoid seeing it necessarily on opening day. In Canada, we have this thing called VIP. I rather pay VIP that will exclude anyone under the fucking age of 18 being in there because it's licensed. Like, I will pay the extra for VIPs just so I was like, oh, I'm not going to get any fucking kids in this fucking movie. Good. And most people, I got to say, before it used to be a big problem. Like, people talk, their fucking phones would be on. Recently, I don't necessarily have those experiences anymore in movie theaters when I do go see movies and other people there. Like, most people are pretty fucking polite now as far as that goes. I think movie theaters also really crack down on this. They have all the PSAs at the front saying, turn off your phones. This is not your home. Don't treat, you know, clean up after yourself, all this stuff. And living 10 years in Japan, I never had the only time I ever had a fucking issue because there were fucking Americans in the theater with me. I saw First Class and I was like, who are these assholes fucking talking during this movie? And then I was with other teachers that I was working with, Americans, Canadians, Australians, British people. And then we look and it's this group of fucking Americans and we could tell they were Americans. And they're walking down past us and we just gave them the death stare. You fucking assholes. Fuck up. You're in another country. Show some fucking courtesy to people fucking you don't fucking even live here. You're just visiting. I fucking know it. Sorry.
When I lived at the embassy, that was one of the first things they showed us when I was in the State Department. It was a video of like these folks in the countryside just sitting and sipping like a cappuccino and eating a piece of French baguette. And then all of a sudden this loud music and these people come screaming. And then they look at each other and in French they're like, American. And I was like, dang it. And they're like, don't be that guy.
That's right. Don't be that fucking guy.
And you know? They were that guy.
But anyways.
Yeah, but now we're going to be that guy and we're going to talk about X-Men.
That's right.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So, as I said before, a couple of ground rules when we do these reviews. We're going to talk a little bit about 2024 versus whenever the movie came out, in this case 2000, what we think about the cast and how they portrayed the roles, and especially with this being an important one because it's the first of a major trilogy. Obviously, there are some other movies that kind of – we're not going to talk about them if we can avoid it. But with this first movie, we're going to talk about the cast. We're going to talk about some of the – fun trivia pieces that entangled. And as a piece of housekeeping, I do want to mention the reason we started last week with Days of Future Past, and because my brain stopped working last week I forgot to mention it. It was the 20th anniversary of the release of the film, and I thought that made more sense to start with it than to kind of tie it. Yeah, see,
makes me feel ancient.
I know. Well, this one's the 24 years ago this one came out. I just blink and I'm like, wait, what? And so we're going to treat it with the respect of the era it was in, and then also talk about it with the eyes we have from 2024. Obviously, were Wolverine and or Deadpool in them? Well, in this case, Wolverine. This starts the saga of Hugh Jackman, save us. And of course, just our thoughts on the movie himself. So, Brent, as the guest, I want to kick it off with you. Looking at this film with 2024 eyes, what were your thoughts on kind of the general themes of the movie and overall the story they told?
It's hard for me because I'm a lifelong comic fan. So it's hard for me to separate when it was coming out from now, mm-hmm. because when it was coming out, it was like I had full internet access, and this was a movie that filmed in Ontario. So being the complete dork that I was at the time, I was finding out where it was filming. I was like looking up like for like local papers, having shots of like people in costume as much as possible. So there was a real excitement for it, especially given that this is really the kickoff of superhero movies in like a modern era. The Blade had come out, but this is what. After this as well, we get Spider-Man, right? If this movie tanks, no Spider-Man. That being said, sitting at home, watching it off of an old DVD copy that I had, not great. It's there are aspects of it I still really like, As far as a movie, I have issues with some of the dialogue. I have issues with the plot in general. Kind of is wonky. The one thing this movie does incredibly well is casting. And the actors in it are good and play those parts really, really well for the most part. But a lot of people will point to that that line Storm has about like what happens to a toad when it gets hit by lightning.
And the same thing as everything else.
That is not the... It may be tied for the worst piece of dialogue in this movie. There's a bunch of other things that are just clunky as shit. And it like reading up on it now as like a full-fledged adult who kind of gets how movies work to a certain extent. This was like went through writer after writer after writer. Like there's debate whether the guy who got the full screenplay credit, how much of the screenplay is his. It's probably by union rules, it's at least 50%, but there's chunks of other people's bits and pieces all throughout it. So maybe that's part of it, but it wasn't an unenjoyable watch, but like now it is like, oof, now I remember why I like X2 better than this one.
WH, what about you? Give your thoughts on, first of all, Brent's excellent point in terms of tying everything together. And I'll add one more piece. The fact that the cast were banned from reading comics on the set and how they had their own like underground railroad of comics led by, of course, Hugh Jackman, so that they could learn about their characters as they tried to play them like any other fictional person.
Okay. I would say when this was released, I probably saw it twice in the theaters. I probably bought the DVD when it came out. And then I had not watched this in a long time. So to do this, I rewatched it. I rewatched it two nights ago and it was excruciating to watch. This is a terrible fucking movie. It's horribly written. It's well cast for the most part, except for the Brotherhood of Mutants. Everyone outside of fucking Ian McKellen is fucking horrible in the roles.
What about Taylor Mayne?
Fuck Taylor Mayne. Okay, he is no Liev Schreiber. Okay, fuck Taylor Mayne. Okay, Rebecca Romijn Stamos has nothing to do in this. It's thank God she got fucking Strange New Worlds so she can show people what a great fucking actor she is. All right, fucking Ray Park. Like this dude, like never made anything worth outside of fucking being Darth Maul, and he couldn't even be the voice of that. Hey, I love me some Ray Park as Darth Maul. Anytime he gets to do the motion capture for like if fucking Darth Maul is on fucking the Clone Wars or anything, kudos. I think it's awesome. Glad he twirls that fucking double blade lightsaber at every fucking convention he goes to. Hey, man, you get paid. You do you, King. Darth Maul, apprentice to the real Lord of the Sith, Darth Sidious. Anyways, before I digress. All right. This movie is, like you said, so many writers. The guy credited with this fucking movie, writing this movie, David Hayter, is his most famous fucking claim to fame in pop culture is he's the English voice of fucking Solid Snake in Metal Gear Solid. Okay? That's his fucking claim to fame. Nothing else he's done is a fucking filmmaker.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Okay. 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 Before we go any further, I was going to put his picture up, but I can't put them together. You got to put some respect on Solid Snake's name. Don't let it wash over you. Don't blame him because the snake didn't do it.
I'm not blaming Solid Snake.
Shadow Moses was who created this script. That's what I'm filing this under.
But this, it's like, you know, whoever wrote what was put on screen, I think, and those of you who know, you'll know, they read every fucking article from fucking Wizard Magazine. I've talked about what do we want to see in the next movie? Okay, we'll make this a check, maybe a checklist from reading fucking Wizard Magazine. We got to have scenes like this, 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 this. And then there is no like, and then the subsequent movies just invalidate almost everything in this fucking movie. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm like, the relationship between Wolverine and Sabretooth invalidated by future installments. The fact that they recast every Brotherhood of Mutant character with better actors, like for those and better written for when they had a better script for these characters, is like telling you something. Like, no offense to Rebecca Romijn Stamos, I think she's great in Star Trek, but anyway, But this is so 2000. This is a movie straight out of 2000. Mm-hmm. Said how fucking bad it is in terms of, like, it does not hold up. The writing is terrible. And I got to say that you might as well. I don't even think it's called. It should be called X-Men. I think it's just called Wolverine and his four friends. That's what I think it should be fucking called. Because this is a fucking Wolverine movie. It's not an X-Men movie in the sense, like, Storm is completely misused, right? Halle Berry's completely wasted. James Marsden as Cyclops might as well just be fucking the guy who played fucking Robin in the fucking Joel Schumacher fucking Batman movie. All right. Jean Grey's the only one who's given any sense of this because she's the love interest for Wolverine, potential love interest for Wolverine. And I like Famke Janssen, but it's really, like, outside of Wolverine, the main characters are Professor X, played by relatively at the time young looking Patrick Stewart. That's what shocked me. I was like, holy shit, Patrick Stewart looks so fucking young. I'm not used to seeing this version of him. Ian McKellen pretty much looks the same age no matter what.
Yeah, he's so, like, frozen. It's kind of like Ric Flair. Like, he's been stuck at this age for like 20 years, and then at some point it's gonna hit, and then he's gonna look like 90.
Oh yeah.
Now I have a couple of trivia pieces I wanted to bring up, and first is we talked about the writer. Sadly, I just opened the door for the director in terms of Bryan Singer. In 2020, during the pandemic, they did a Zoom birthday party for the 20th anniversary of the X-Men, and Ryan Reynolds crashed it, which should have been the first indicator that, like, this guy, for all your thoughts of Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place, Ryan Reynolds is a pretty, like, straight shooter when it comes to, if he wants something, he's going to try to get it. And so the fact that this man crashed their party is amazing. To the chagrin, the visual chagrin. If you guys get a chance, it's on the internet. You can see Singer, and some of the folks are like, "How did he get here? Like, why is he here? Is he gonna make some joke about me that's legally binding?" And that's one of the other issues. The Hollywood Reporter released an article in 2020 talking about the fact that in addition to sneaking Hugh Jackman Wolverine comics and other X-Men comic books for the cast, Kevin Feige was tasked by Shula Donner, Richard Donner's wife and a big producer in the Hollywood circles, to monitor Bryan Singer because of the allegations he had at the time. That blew my mind when I was doing research for this. So he came in as just a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed assistant producer and left with the knowledge of, I am now trying to make sure this film gets filmed. Because I don't know if you guys are aware, while under the influence of drugs, Bryan Singer had Hugh Jackman do a... Bryan Singer, while under Bryan Singer being under the influence of drugs, he tried to film a stunt scene with Hugh Jackman, who got injured during that scene.
Oh.
And almost left the movie and had to have that massaged. And again, Kevin Feige to the rescue. That, to me, blew my mind. I for you all, like me, in 2000, seeing the X-Men, it was amazing to see it on the screen. In 2024, reading articles like this, seeing with the light of day some of the stuff that was going on in the background, seeing some of the casting decisions, it boggles my mind. You mentioned Rebecca Remains, now Rebecca Remains, no longer Rebecca Remains Stamos. At the time, it was okay to have an actress cast, like, basically her, Famke Janssen, and Halle Berry were cast, not just for their acting ability, but for their looks. As we discussed last week, Halle wins an Oscar, and that fundamentally changes the relationship up until Last Stand, where they lie to her and say, "Hey, we're going to give you all these things." And it's like, ah, not so fast, my friend. In this movie, like you said, you have the relationship set up, and you also have Rogue kind of as the Jubilee role, where you see her journey from, you know, nearly killing her boyfriend, to Wolverine's story, to being the fulcrum and the living MacGuffin for Magneto's mutant transformation device. It's almost like the BET and G.I. Joe movie, broadcast energy transmitter, for those of you who are uninitiated. I'm not saying that Cobra created the BET. Anyway.
Black Entertainment Television?
Oh, yeah, for years that was a running joke amongst my friends who were black. It's like, wait, Cobra created the BET? What the? Anyway, so this movie, to me, had a lot of things that went well for it, but for the most part, looking at it with 2024 eyes when I watched it, it was very frustrating. It was like, how did we get to this point? Like, why was this? Like Brent mentioned, in 98, we had Blade. Blade, to me, I can watch Blade 1 and 2.
Yeah.
and I can tolerate three just to watch Triple H and just seeing that, because I think that's quite funny. But it's so sad to me that the first one, and I'm looking forward to seeing two, because I do think my love for Nightcrawler, and I think the way they kind of posited him in the world was a lot better. But overall, it was a struggle, honestly, to watch the movie. Brent, I'll come back to you. What were your thoughts on, in terms of Hugh Jackman's portrayal of Wolverine? A lot of folks, you mentioned as a person who is a big comic fan, like a lot of folks at the time online were getting very ornery because like, he's not height accurate. Like, this guy's 6 foot. How dare you not find like Tom Cruise and put him in claws? What were your thoughts on that at the time? And do you feel like they made the right choice?
At the time, it was more along the lines of like, wow, they're giving this like essentially nobody a substantial role in this movie. And now, as like the relationship between Wolverine and Rogue in this movie is the best part. And it's in part because of the chemistry between those two actors. I think he doesn't completely nail Wolverine in this, but it's definitely like he gets into it and he digs it. And we see that evolution with him continuing that role through the years. I really like him in X2 with this part. And again, you know, I thought he was like, he, by the end of this movie, this is the guy you want as Wolverine, but he's not helped by the scripts that he's got to deal with.
And we were discussing before we got on the air, and I wanted to give you the opportunity, the strange bedfellows that eventually led to Hugh Jackman getting cast. Mm. If you want to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll kind of go around the horn and on thoughts on that.
So originally Doug Ray Scott, who I guess he's best known for, he's the bad guy in Mission Impossible 2. And I think he's been doing a TV series for the last little while. He was cast in the role, like he got it after offers were made to other actors, except he was filming Mission Impossible 2 at the time and had a motorcycle accident. Now, I've also read an article where apparently Tom Cruise may have been pulling some strings here and there to like keep pushing it back so he would not be doing this X-Men movie. So like basically through bad luck or, you know, being cast in Mission Impossible 2. And I can see from his standpoint, not fighting back on it. Like I'm in Mission Impossible 2. It's a movie with Tom Cruise. Who knows about the superhero thing? Because Blade did really well, but the like between Blade and like Batman Returns, you know, there's that gulf of Captain America, The Punisher, like all these terrible movies. And he could have just seen it as like, you know what? I'm not going to fight Tom on this. I'm in his movie. If this goes well, the sky's the limit for my career. And, you know, they go to Russell Crowe and Russell Crowe's like, I don't think I want to do this. But, you know, I got a buddy who's perfect for this part. And they kind of futz around and eventually they land on Hugh Jackman more out of convenience than anything else. Like he fits the part. He looks kind of okay, and he can start Monday, which is what we need. So it, like through these, like just like little things, Hugh Jackman gets a career. Like without a shadow of a doubt, would he have had a movie career if he didn't do Wolverine? He's a very talented actor. He could have probably worked his way out, but this just like puts a rocket to him right off out of the gate.
And it also sets up a nice way for him to compare what else came after this. So I think about his musical career where it's like, oh, you've seen him as this burly guy. Let's see him as the greatest showman. And it's like, oh, wow, he can do that. And it's like, yeah, that was in my back pocket before I started the whole thing. And that to your point, I think that's a really solid sliding doors moment that folks never really think about. And I think he's very appreciative of, and I think that's why he comes back to the role. WH, what are your thoughts on the sliding doors of bringing in Hugh Jackman, his role as becoming Wolverine? And we don't really see, as Brent mentioned, the real final product until maybe a movie or two later.
At the time, I didn't have a problem with like them saying like we're going to go with an unknown, because usually that like unconventional casting usually tends to work out really well. in superhero movies. I think for Hugh Jackman, like I don't know who he was when he was cast, when I'm reading the news about this, and then like, okay, well, like I used to see a picture of him as Wolverine. It's like, okay, I see it. Easy hide. Listen, they're not casting a fucking multi-million dollar movie around someone who's 5'4", 5'4". They're not. Okay. That's what he is in the comics. That's not going to work. Guess what? Michael Keaton, as much as I hate the fucking 1989 Batman movie now, I like Michael Keaton for the most part in that role. Okay. I was like fine with it. When I see him, I'm like, you know what? He's pretty fucking good about in this Wolverine. Rewatching this in 2024, him and Anna Paquin, their chemistry, him and Rogue, that helps make some of this marginally watchable. The other thing is the relationship and chemistry between Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, because they are real life friends and they're both amazing actors in their own right. So those are your saving graces for this film for the most part. But he is so good. And I think once he is like, you know what, I'm going to flex my muscles a little bit more. I'm not going to say as many stupid things. And by the time you get to X2 and even The Last Stand to some degree, but definitely when you get to like Days of Future Past, when you get to the Wolverine solo movies, he, you know, like they're not right, like going through a checklist of things or as much of a checklist as you have on this film. Like, we got to have this happen. We got to have them say this. Oh, but I got to make sure he says bub several times. Okay. And, you know, he's got to have the dog tag. He's got to make references to Weapon X and stuff like that. But I can't imagine, like, you know, it's like anytime you recast a role originated by someone on the big screen, like I can't imagine anyone else playing that role until that person plays that role and is given it a chance to show if they can be good in it, right? Like it's like Bond. Like, no one thought, who's going to replace, you know, Sean Connery? He did it so long, and he was so synonymous. That character was so synonymous with Sean Connery. And then, you know, a lot of people like George Lazenby, but it's not until like three movies in with Roger Moore. It's like, oh, for many people, that's their Bond. And then it's like, who's going to be after him? And I like Timothy Dalton as Bond, but then for another generation, Pierce Brosnan is their Bond. And then subsequently after that, most people can't imagine Daniel Craig not being James Bond in, you know, in the modern era. So I'm glad they got him back. I'm glad they said, hey, what happened to Logan is not invalidated. Your character died. This is a different version of that. And we're going to, and potentially if we do another Avengers movie, you could be in the Avengers. And I'm sure it's like, by the way, that cruise liner you want to buy, that's, you can afford that with the boat money we're going to pay you if you end up being the fucking Avengers movie.
And I guess the last person I want to bring up before we get to kind of the forum questions, comments, and statements is James Marsden. I think his role as Cyclops was one where, as we talked about with the role of Beast in First Class and later Days of Future Past, whereas the actor could have played, like Nicholas Hoult should have played Cyclops in Days of Future Past, I think Marsden would have been better off playing Bobby Drake if they hadn't made an X2 to decision to make Bobby such a young analog for Rogue. Because looking at him now with the jury duty, I don't know if you guys saw that series where it was all actors and like B-tier famous people in this courthouse. And the only person that wasn't was one guy on the jury. And so like by the end, it's this crazy case, and Marsden is hilarious in it. And the more I saw him, the more I'm like, man, most of your career has been marred by you're not really Cyclops, where you could have been so many other things. But in the opposite of Jackman, he's kind of maligned for taking a role and being in a role that really didn't necessarily fit. Brent, what were your thoughts on Marsden as Cyclops? Do you agree, disagree with him in his casting?
He's not great. I don't know if it's so much him as it is the material that he's given to work with. I kind of felt that Cyclops should be a little bit older, and maybe he, like, in real life at that time had the age, but he was coming off of doing like those teen horror movies, if I'm not mistaken, right? Like, so yeah. I just picture him as kind of a teenager, and he's obviously younger than Famke Janssen is. Mm-hmm. And I always feel that like Jean Grey and Cyclops should be roughly around the same age. Wolverine should look a little bit older than the two of them, but not by an absurd amount. So you like the love triangle, when you see it, you can like, oh, I can tell why. Just James Marsden in this is just kind of like just there. Like, there's no real character to Cyclops other than he can blast lasers out of his eyes. And that's kind of about it. Like, his dialogue is just kind of stiff and wooden. And is it the script that he was given? Is it just, like, at that point, he just didn't have the confidence to, like, you know, go for the gusto or whatever on it? It just... He's not offensive, but he's just there. Like, it really, I feel bad saying this in some ways. It could have been like any other guy of his generation from like, I Know What You Did Last Summer 2, and it wouldn't have made a heck of a lot of difference.
Just to help with the age difference, Famke is 9 years older than Marsden. And he would have been about 26 at the time that the movie came out, because he's 50 now.
Yeah,
it was a little, he was like in that weird spot, and then she was in that weird spot where it's like, I want to be a leading lady, and then unfortunately, because of the way Hollywood works, like, do I turn this role down, and now all of a sudden I'm mom number six for every movie I'm in? So yeah, it was a weird house of cards with that casting. WH, what did you think?
Well, I think Brent hit it on the head. Like, he's not given much to work with the script, because Wolverine is the star of this film. He's the alpha of this film, and Cyclops is meant to be the beta cuck of this film. Okay. Wolverine is Bobby fucking Lashley, and fucking Cyclops is fucking Rusev, and Jean Grey is Lana. Okay. if you get my wrestling reference, that's what he's, the fucking beta cuck. He's got earmuffs on for his fucking visor. He's got earmuffs on. He looks fucking stupid. Then we could talk about the Matrix outfits, the Matrix-inspired black leather outfits, which are fucking horrible in retrospect. At the time, it was the rage, right? Everyone's got to wear fucking black leather. Everyone has got to wear fucking black leather outfits, padding, all this shit. Now, it's like, that's so fucking 2000s. It looks horrible. Thank God he's getting... I wish they went with a tan, because that's the best version of Wolverine's costume. But I'm okay as long as it's not black leather. Thank God he didn't wear any of that shit in Logan, or any of the X-Men of Wolverine standalone movies. But yeah, James Marsden, not so much his fault. I think he's doing the best he can with such a terrible written role. And it's a shame, because if you're truly an X-Men fan from the movie, from the comics, you're like, this is not Cyclops. This, and it's not his fault per se. It's they write this guy to be like, this guy's a putz, and we're going to write him like a putz. It's one of the other famous lines is like, how do we know it's you, Wolverine? How do we know it's not you and not Mystique? You're a dick. That works for me. You know, he accepts being called a dick by the guy trying to steal his girlfriend. Beta cuck.
So I have a couple of trivia before we jump to the forum. First up, Sir Ian McKellen, I'm sorry. Was offered the role to Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. And so they rearranged shooting because Singer so badly wanted to keep him as Magneto. So that also probably ran into the same issue with Wolverine. It's like, well, are you changing it for one guy? Sir Ian is friends with Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart was the only person that Singer wanted for Professor X. And so other people tried. And as a big fan of Star Trek, The Next Generation, it was going to be Sir Patrick or bust, which, again, those are two signs where I can respect him. However, similar to the article I read a few minutes ago when we were talking about MCU news, Rebecca Romijn basically did not see the rest of the cast other than when they were filming scenes, because in order to keep the paint and everything worked, she had to sit in an isolated windowless room. And one of the direct quotes she had was, I had almost no contact with the rest of the cast. It was like I was making a different movie from everyone else. It was hell. So on her last day of filming, she brought tequila for the cast, and they wound up doing an action scene between her and Hugh Jackman, and she threw up all over him.
Nice.
I'm like, what? And then the last one I wanted to throw out, Singer turned this movie down three times, believing that comic book movies were unintelligent literature. However, After watching the X-Men animated series, he found the story's themes of prejudice and discrimination compelling and agreed to do the live-action movie. That is...
Who else is in the running, Rich, to direct this film if he didn't do it?
Richard Donner was talked to because it's his wife that was producing it. And he went, nah, I did Superman. I'm good.
Yeah, he's like, I don't need a Donner cut of this. I have a couple for Rogue. Kirsten Dunst, Sarah SMG, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Alicia Silverstone, Drew Barrymore, Katie Holmes, and Christina Ricci were all considered. And Natalie Portman turned it down.
She learned from Star Wars.
Yeah.
I don't think she's too bad. I think she's not given enough credit. She's pretty good. I think she's great as Padme. Anyways, I digress. Look, there's one name you said there that I think would have worked. Sorry, before who'd you say before or after Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yes, I think she would have done a good job in this role. But I think Anna Paquin is great, especially when she gets the streak. I'm like, there she is. There's Rogue.
Now, if you guys don't mind, I'd like to throw something out that came up when I was doing notes.
It is.
How much better or worse would this movie been? Because basically the draft before they started shooting also had Beast and Nightcrawler in this. Like, just adding more characters to this ensemble. That's why Jean Grey is suddenly a doctor in this movie, is they eliminated Beast at the kind of the last minute and gave all the medical stuff he was supposed to do to her character.
Again, he didn't care about the guy. So here's what I would do, Brent. If they were able to get Kelsey Grammer as Beast, I'm in.
Yeah.
He probably makes this like 10% better. What about you?
Does it become too crowded though at that point?
Yes.
Like the movie on a whole?
It's Wolverine's movie. They don't care about the other characters. Like you short shrift like everyone else. Storm and Psycho. Like, first of all, the X-Men are three people. It's before Wolverine joins. It's Cyclops, Storm, and Jean Grey. That's the X-Men. They're not going on missions.
Yeah.
Well, he's not sending them on missions, you would think. Yeah. Like, you know, like it's the three adult students that he still has left because Hank McCoy's out in Washington trying to get with Trish Tilby or some shit like that. I don't know if that's in the movie live action, but definitely the animated show. But this is like three people. Like Nightcrawler, you have to, you can't overpopulate a movie necessarily. Like the reason why Avengers works, the first Avengers works, you know, is because they all had, it wasn't their origin story, right? Because you have to throw in Magneto's origin story, because that's the crux of what he wants to say about mutants, is like, they're like, this is what's happening, the Holocaust for mutants is happening now, and Magneto witnessed it during the Holocaust for Jews during World War II and the Nazi regime. It's, you know, like, so that's the thing that the writer and this and singer want to really emphasize. And it's a thing that's kind of still holds up to this day, especially when you do stories about Magneto. It's like, never again. It happened to my people once. It's not going to happen to my people now. And so, you have to throw in Wolverine's origin story, because we get so many hints about his origin, and he's the first X-Men outside of, like, Rogue's technically not an X-Men at the point, neither is he, but he's like, or she's the way we introduce to Wolverine. Coincidentally, she meets him somewhere in the northern Rockies of Canada, like, but she's from Louisiana, like, go figure. What a wonderful, where's Uatau to like say this was meant to happen in the yeah, great voice of
canon event.
You know what I mean? But I don't think it would have been made better. I honestly don't, because like they wouldn't have been given the real estate to be featured characters like they are, like in X2. I think saving them. And then they were cut for budget reasons. And that tells you all you need to know about Fox's commitment to this. It's like, okay, we'll try to make this, but if it fails, it's done. We're done with this. They're lucky that this thing was successful. They're lucky that so many people thought it's good enough. I think at the time, people were fooling themselves, thinking, this is great. At the time, that's 2000 standards, probably you know, I probably thought, yeah, this is great. Oh, fuck yeah. They did it justice. Now I can't. I think it's excruciating to watch because so much better stuff has come out since. excuse me. Including within the Fox X-Men canon. First Class beats this like it's not even a close race. It's like First Class as a film and as an X-Men film is like number one. And this first X movie is like number 20, in my opinion.
And so you guys have heard our opinions about the movie and about everything going on. So let's hear it from yours. As always, you can go to forum.postwrestling.com and provide those for us. And now I'm going to go through and read per the terms of our host co-host agreement. And so Crooked Letter 9 came out with Days of Future Past was the Star Trek Generations of the X-Men franchise. Seeing the OGs mingle with the first class era of mutants was delightful, and it retconned events of the previous films, looking at UX3 effectively. Quicksilver stole it. However, certain mutants like Shadowcat get shortchanged. It's the higher end of the franchise. I think it might have ended there, but I wanted to make sure we started from where we got our comments and not just where this movie was. And so a couple of days ago, Red Raider 7 asked, it was kind of strange to order to review it in, isn't it? Why not do it the order they released? As I mentioned earlier, it was the 20th anniversary of Days of Future Past. Wanted to do that to kind of honor that. And that's why. And now, T. Anthony Auld. Oh, that's another timeline aspect. Okay, so there y'all. You all did it well. You explained it for each other. That's why I also enjoy forum.postwrestling.com because folks don't attack, they inform. Steve Groves Weed says, so I went to the theaters to watch this. Not sure if it was open at night. I brought my son, who was barely 5 years old. Not sure that was the right parenting choice. After that opening scene in Poland, he was feeling a little uneasy. By the time we got to the scene where Logan puts the guy up against the wall with two claws and the middle comes out slow, that's when he started tucking on my arm saying he wanted to leave. Oh, no. I reassured him that none of it was real. He was a trooper and he made it through the rest. I rewatched it for this show and it effing holds up. Although the effects that are very 2000 and there's a lot of swinging on wires. Could have been done better. Most def. But at the time, we were just happy seeing those characters on screen.
Let me tell you something about Steve Grows Weed. Okay.
Yeah, he grows weed.
His weed's pretty good. His opinion about this movie, not so much.
All right, so we have DC Jermaine from Chicago. This movie is the results of Marvel fumbling a huge bag. No way should you ever have X-Men, Spider-Man, The Punisher, The Hulk, Daredevil, plus more, and have to sell them off. This was WCW levels of bad fumbling. When I first seen this movie, I said it was okay because my standards were a lot lower. They got lower when you kept watching DC. I know The Matrix was so huge, they wanted to put everyone in black, but we saw Batman and Superman plus Spider-Man in their comic book accurate suits. What comic was it that had Magneto turning people into mutants? Right, they made that stuff up. Okay, another thing that stood out to me in this movie is I have never seen a cast someone so right as Wolverine with Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart as Professor X to the worst casting of Halle No-Eye Berry as Storm. She may be beautiful, but Storm she is not. Storm is African. You couldn't even find a dark-skinned sister to play the role? She couldn't even give us an African accent? Then she doubles down and plays Selena Kyle. Halle's superhero isn't your thing. And that's cool. The movie was 6.5 out of 10. Thanks for doing the show. WH and Rich have chemistry like Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart. Speaking of, the writer of HBO The Watchmen series is writing The Lantern Show. We are getting a treat. MCU later. Okay. So, the reason for the 50th time that Spider-Man, X-Men, The Punisher, Hulk, and Daredevil had to go bye-bye was because of missteps within the comic side of things. And Ike Perlmutter and others having some bad decisions made. Those do not in any way reflect the Marvel Cinematic Universe, nor do they reflect anything other than the changing times and priorities of a marketplace in terms of comic books. I want to read a quote for you that I think really applies to what you're talking about. What we try to do is get really great leadership. The philosophy of our company is we don't want people to go to meetings. We want people to do the work. So I was meeting and I met with this guy. It was a big hit and we're happy about it because why isn't this guy running our stuff? He grew up his whole life with it, his whole life with these characters, and he knows every one of them, their family. He just wrote. So for me, I feel like at least half or two thirds of our projects might not succeed, but we want to give them the chance. That's David Zaslav talking about James Gunn. If the guy who currently is in charge of Warner Brothers Discovery thinks that two-thirds or half of the movies James Gunn makes will fail, That is not the smartest thing to do. And that's not a mark on James Gunn, mind you. That's a mark on David Zaslav, CEO of Warner. I will not use that to say DC sucks or anything like that, because that would be silly of me. I think the management at the time, which is now, are making terrible decisions in the real time to the detriment of every property they own, not just comic books. Think about that.
Wait, Does that mean I'm going to become Parallax in the future?
Yes.
I'm assuming you're Jon Stewart.
No. I was going to be Hal Jordan. You're Jon Stewart.
Am I Jon Stewart?
Yeah, we're going transracial.
Hey, I'm all about transracialism.
Yeah, so I know. Oh, I know. Kang. You're waiting for Mr. Kang to become
Kang. Right. That's right. Got Korean American, great Tim Kang as Kang. Come on. Kevin, I know you're fucking listening. Just think about it. You'll see it make sense. Like the Pet Shop Boy song says, you know it makes sense.
Hey, good day to the Brap Brap Gang and all you freeloaders. That's right. I believe this episode is
freeloaders. Wait a sec. Rich, just before we go, listen, you fucking cheapskates, go pay for this shit. If you want to hear more of this gold, this fucking audio gold, you want to see more of this visual, like me going off on things on fucking YouTube, you got to pay for this shit. All right, go ahead.
Oh, man. Okay. Good day to the Brap Brap Gang and all you freeloaders out there. Give WH what he wants and pay up for one of those sweet post-wrestling Patreon memberships. Speaking as a happy customer myself, it's worth the cash. Anyway, as mentioned in a previous episode that freeloaders didn't hear, this is the one X-Men film I saw before going blind. I'm not laughing about that. I'm laughing about the fact that he's killing freeloaders. Remembering things a bit more vividly, it's kind of amusing in retrospect how badly they wanted the movie to be taken seriously despite its comic book origins. Now when you look at it, a lot of these choices are actually what date the movie. Black leather jumpsuits, overly expository dialogue, and forcing characters into roles with no room for nuance. It's strange to see what they thought made these films inaccessible to larger audiences. Long before troubling accusations surfaced, getting Bryan Singer to direct a film was a big deal. It gave X-Men some credibility when the most successful comic book movie franchise had ended with Batman and Robin 3 years prior. Showcasing this transition, you can see some creatives took the material seriously, while others thought it was a joke. Although the themes and dialogue and non-action scenes were excellent, some parts of the fights and characterizations were downright silly. Sabretooth growling like a tiger for the whole movie is obviously hashtag not my Sabretooth, and is probably not anyone's Sabretooth. He's like Sabretooth adjacent for me. I'm not also into the various jigs Toad decided to break out. He's not a leprechaun because he's short. His powers mimic a toad. I could care less about the latter since they were always kind of lame to me. Making Mystique a mute was another baffling decision, but I argue that all female characters were treated poorly in different ways. Rogue was a damsel in distress. Storm said lame things and fried Toad. Jean was mainly there for Scott and, as Brent mentioned, Dr. Sassy Pants, and Logan to pine over as well. At least this issue is somewhat fixed in X2, however. Either way, there's no doubt that this movie was filmed well. Aside from the outdated CGI and sound effects, the cinematography was really interesting and creative from what I remember. I would also agree on that, especially the scene with Scott at the train station. I thought that was kind of, again, filmed almost like, what was the... Not the Usual Suspects. What was the other Singer movie?
Apt People?
Apt People?
Yes. It gave me a little bit of that dark vibe, but then it got into CGI weirdness. And thank you both for that. I'm going on 24 years here, but Wolverine's bar fighting scene, the transition from Professor X using Cerebro to Rogue in the train station. There we go. Magneto and the police standoff. That is a great scene with the bullets and everything. That was good. Mm-hmm. And Wolverine stabbing Rogue. Oh, man, that is a good one. And of course, who can forget Logan's huge grin when riding Scott's motorcycle? It's one of the rare times where leaning into the cheesiness actually works. Okay. I'll add the other time is when they're trying to figure out if it's Rogue or not. I'm sorry, if it's Mystique or not. And he looks at him and says, you're a dick. He's like, that's a real.
All right. Just a quick question. Yeah. Why does Cyclops' motorcycle have fucking super speed on it?
Because
he wouldn't survive that. His mutant power is not riding a motorcycle really fucking fast. It's shooting fucking laser optic beams out of his fucking eyes and wearing earmuffs for a visor.
Listen, brother, if he could handle the danger room, he could handle a little crotch rocket action there.
Like Wolverine can't, like, he's like, whoa, this thing's so fast. But then he likes it because, like, oh, I'm Wolverine. I'm fucking indestructible. Cyclops is not fucking indestructible. This motorcycle makes no fucking sense. If it was Wolverine's motorcycle and it's tricked out like a fucking James Bond fucking Batman motorcycle, sure. Listen, you free fucking freeloaders. This is the kind of bullshit you're going to hear every fucking review, okay?
Wow. Listen. If you want to get weird, WH, how about the fact that throughout this movie, I want to say the first third, going into half of the movie, I don't know if you guys remember this. If you look at them in real life, Mr. Mardson and Mr. Jackman are very, like, I think Mardson's like 5'7" and Hugh Jackman's like 6'1". So they made Hugh kneel down and Mardson stand up, and halfway through they just were like, screw it. And so if you watch the movie with that in mind, I didn't want to say this earlier, if you watch this movie now with that in mind, you will never unsee the point when it switches and he's towering over him. And it's just absurd. So when he steals the bike, I think that's the last time they're face to face. Any other time after that where he's just like when he says, like, you're a dick, he's towering over him. He's like, you want to fight about it? No, I'm good, Mr. Jackman. No, thank you. But yes, this is what you get when you get W.H. Park unplugged. But back to Blind Avenger. Still, the casting wasn't flawless. Cyclops felt like such a dork, which is still a large misconception by some casual fans. And Famke Janssen as Jean was slightly off. I thought she did a good job of capturing the character's spirit, but it just wasn't the right person. Finally, I know this may be an unpopular opinion, but I never liked Halle Berry as Storm. It has nothing to do with her ability as an actress or looks, because no one should be judged that way. It's stupid. She just isn't what I think of when matching the character on screen to what's in the comic books. To me, the animated series does a better job of capturing that, and Barry just never met my expectations the same way. I thought the X-Men and X-Men Apocalypse was better, even though the movie was awful. Speaking of the animated series, the truck driver giving Rogue a ride in Canada is Beast voice actor from the original show in X-Men 97. Nice! Wrapping things up, we got a poutine update. My wife and I hit poutine feast while we were in London, Ontario, last weekend. She had a honey, garlic, sesame, chicken poutine. Okay, that's so much stuff before you get to poutine. I feel like those different flavors overpower the poutine. I had a garlic chicken shawarma poutine, and both were excellent. Just give me the chicken shawarma. Give me the honey, garlic, sesame, chicken. Y'all
that's not poutine.
Poutine.
No, that's poutine.
You get that. I get that. Let's separate it. Lower part of North America gets the meat, y'all get the poutine. I think that makes sense. I like to think my choice honored our OG MCU Avengers with a Canadian twist. Stay well and enjoy a crisp, ice-cold can of Canada Dry, my guys. Until next time, make mine MCU later. Rap, rap. And
listen,
last
hold on. Just want to say, I love this guy, Blind Avenger. He used to be a cheapskate. Then he heard a free episode. Then he signed up. And listen, legit, this man is blind, but he loves hearing me and Rich go off or go on and go off so much. Brap, brap. He's fucking paying for it now, and he loves every fucking Canadian dime he spends on us. And you're welcome, Blind Avenger. You're fucking welcome.
Is he in the Parks and Rec Club?
Some people aren't. You know who they are. But we'll let Blind Avenger in. You know what? I'll even forgive Steve Grows Weed for liking this movie because his weed is pretty good.
So you're allowed. Blind Avenger, Steve Grows Weed, you have now officially been inducted into the park. Congratulations. Now, Muggin is going to bring us home. X-Men 2000 was a big bang of this genre's breakthrough into mainstream film. The foundations here were solid. It put Hugh Jackman on the map and Patrick Stewart was perfectly cast. I found it very dope to know that David Hayter wrote the screenplay. We already talked about that, which we're going to just keep moving. Let's pretend like that didn't happen because did he write? Because it felt like the screen. No, I'm not going to do that to say Solid Snake. Solid start to the franchise. The Post Cafe offers plenty to bang for the buck. Word to W.H. Park. We are in the Bang Bang Gang, and we are all done with...
Rap Gang. We're not the Bang Bang Gang. We're the...
Gang. Legally, we can't be the Bang Bang Gang. We are the Rap Battalion? I don't know.
We can be the gang. It's cool.
Rap Gang. Okay. So, before we get out of here, as our guest, Brent, if you don't have it yet, I can throw the W.H. and then come back to you, but do you have any recommendations for any comics that you might want to throw out? Whether it's a trade paperback you would think ties into what we saw... Well, nothing probably ties into what we saw with the X-Men movie, but anything you might even want to recommend. Like last week, we were talking about Days of Future Past. WH brought up Blood. What is it?
Blood Hunt. Issue makes no sense if you don't buy 17 other fucking comics in this stupid crossover.
I would tend to agree, or at least you have to buy Dracula. Dracula is definitely one of the ones that you have to get.
Crap, that was one of the 17 I didn't buy this week at my comic shop. I got like Blade. I got all the other ones. Midnight Suns.
I'll go with two, one to tie in with the movie and one just because I love the book so much and it would appeal to your audience. The first one is X-Men Mutant Genesis, which was the first Jim Lee story arc of the X-Men. No uncanny, no anything. It was just X-Men number one when they relaunched the title, when they launched that title back in the 90s. That's kind of what launches the cartoon and so many others. The writing, it's not amazing, but the Jim Lee's art on that is really good and really influential. Like, you can see it into the cartoon and everything else. Like, his design for Cyclops' costume in that is the one we most associate with Cyclops at this point, unless you're old like me, and then you can go further back. The other is an Image book that I just love to death, and I push it on people anytime I get a chance to. And it's called Do a Powerbomb by Daniel Warren Johnson from Image Comics. Fantastic book about wrestling, sort of. But the way I always describe all of his books is it's a lot of action, a lot of action, punches you right in the feels. A lot of action, punches you in the feels. And his art is just super awesome. He's currently writing the current Transformers comic, and he wrote the first arc, which was a book that, had you mentioned to me 2 years ago, oh, you're really going to like Transformers, Brent, I would have probably laughed at you. And right now it's one of my favorite books that comes out every month.
Never. You'll never get me, Brent, to read a Transformers comic with that. My beloved G.I. Joe.
We recommended that last week, and a little WH poo poo face over here decided he wants to still hate on it. I was like, why can't you love a book that has Optimus Prime doing a Rainmaker, a German suplex, and then also doing the scene from at the end of Platoon? I just grabbed this week's issue, or maybe the week before his issue, because I was a little late on my pull list. I cannot wait to see what he's doing. Listen, WH, Optimus Prime versus Devastator. It was the ultimate, like, I'm hooting and holler and or hollering from my bed as I'm reading that a couple of weeks ago.
You might as well tell me, hey, don't you want to see Darby Allin set fucking Jack Perry on fire? No, I don't fucking want to watch that shit.
It's
fuck
totally,
you.
No. This is a man with the matrix of freaking leadership out here doing what leaders do in a world that hates inferior. Wait a minute. Wrong books. Still accurate. A world that hates and fears him to the point where he doesn't. Okay, Brent. Ignore WH for a second. He doesn't want to read anything about the Energon universe. He doesn't want to hear anything about the tie-ins. I tried to explain to him what's going on with Cobra Commander and Cobra La. I'll do the yulations at a later date because you don't understand how much I love Cobra La.
You know what? I got to just gift do a powerbomb for John Pollock just to get him to read a fucking comic book. He might actually read a fucking comic book if I just gift it to him. I might just gift it to him, you know?
Yeah.
His birthday's already passed, but you know what? John's such a good friend of mine. That you know, I'm just gonna go buy a copy at work and give it to him next time I see him.
And what about Wonder Woman Dead Earth?
Wonder Woman Dead Earth.
I love that book too.
Good book.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be another one. I mean, Mr. Johnson brings. I have become a big fan, and as WH would have told you during our sojourn through Philadelphia,
I have a custom sketch of Juice Thunder Liger from him.
Really? Fucking jealous now.
Because courtesy of my friend Mike Murray, because he said. He kind of was in contact with him during one time I was in Japan. When I came back for a visit, he says, this is for you. Like, it's a custom sketch of Jushin Thunder Liger by Daniel Warren Johnson. So I can say I own that in my comic book paraphernalia memorabilia, you know.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
It's Daniel Warren Johnson can do no wrong. I've got the I'm waiting on that artist edition that they did through Kickstarter. That for Extremity, because I love his stuff so much. So so X-Men Mutant Genesis and Do a Powerbomb. Those would be my recommendations.
Outstanding. Well, thank you for being on. And before we get to WH's recommendations, I just said before we get to WH's recommendations, this is for the free people, WH. Lock it in. Before we get to your recommendation and we depart, Brent, is there anything you'd like to broadcast, put out in the world, whether it's your shop, any interests, like any anything. Floor is yours, my friend.
If you want to hear me ramble on about more nerdy stuff, True North Nerds, truenorthnerds.com. It's my bi-weekly podcast with a bunch of friends of mine where we go over MCU movies, DCU movies on the occasions that they come out, Star Wars, all that sort of stuff, as well as a little bit of music nerdiness. And if you would like to buy X-Men comics and you want to venture north of Toronto, Big B Barry, bigbberry.com, or sorry, bigbberrycomics.com. It's our my store that I work at. We've currently got, like, I think we still have X-Men's 1 through 5, if you want to throw down some really big bucks. But there's lots of cheap X-Men comics to buy as well, so...
I've been there. It's a good store.
Thank you.
I like going there. It's a little far. It's in Barrie. Yeah. But yeah. But Rich, if you had more, if you were spending more than 3 fucking nights in Toronto, I'd say we should go up there. But you know,
well, how far is far? Because like in Pittsburgh,
it's like 2 hours.
Oh crap!
Oh, okay. It's not 2 hours.
It's in fucking Barrie, Brent. It's fucking 2 hours.
45 minutes.
No. Okay. Like, oh yeah. Okay. If there's no fucking traffic. Guess what? There's usually traffic on the 400. So.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. Wait. You'd be coming up on a Saturday, right? Yeah. This time of year. That's okay. I apologize. WH. Yeah. That is a 3-hour drive.
It's fucking a long time with traffic because people are going to fucking Wonderland too. They're going to that fucking that flea market on the way up to Barrie as well. You know what I'm talking about. Anyways, my turn.
Yes.
All right. I'm not recommending anything related that inspired this movie because no, fuck that. Excalibur Epic Collection Volume 4. This is the return of co-creator Alan Davis to this title where he's not only drawing this fucking thing, he's also writing it. And it's good shit. Okay. We got Shadowcat, Nightcrawler, Rachel Summers, Phoenix, Captain Britain, who Henry Cavill should play.
Yes.
If he's in the MCU, he should play Brian Braddock, and Megan. Plus you get fucking Psylocke showing up to team up to take on, you know, Brian and Betsy's insane brother, Jamie Braddock. It's good shit. I like this run. This is probably my favorite run of this title outside of guy who's canceled. We don't really talk about him. Wrote Moon Knight. Great run on Moon Knight. Great comic book and Transmetropolitan. His run on this book is pretty good, fucking good too. But I'm not recommending that one. We're recommending the Alan Davis return as writer and artist on Excalibur.
Now, just because I'm looking at here and I want to make sure, was that the right link, Brent, for True North Nerds? Because if it wasn't, I don't want to.
Yep, no, that was the right one. Okay. Yeah, that showed. We've had a couple of the other shows. Sailor Snacking was my wife's show where they ate snacks and talked about Sailor Moon. And so,
that is so fun.
Yeah, that's definitely the right one. Thank you though for checking.
Of course. I want to make sure. That's really cool. And WH, listen, as always, for me, I have no recommendations this week. Do a powerbomb. I will triple underscore and just go read that. And I'll also, I guess as a side, I will continue. I've been reading it since we went to Philadelphia, Under the Trees Where No One Sees.
Oh,
sweet baby Jesus. This book, I tried to explain to my shop owner, Jeff, a Phantom of the Attic here in Pittsburgh. And he's like, yeah, Rich, what do you think about this? I was like, Jeff, it's Dexter with anthropomorphic animals. I don't know how else to put it. And it's glorious. And he's like, huh, you might like this. And he gave me another book. And so now there's another book I'm trying out too as well. So
Is it Feral?
I think it is.
Yeah, that's the other one I think people would probably like if they like that one.
It's a lot, man. And I'm also reading the Tom King collection of Danger Street.
Oh, that one's I'm trying to, I did read it when it was coming out as single issues.
Yeah, I've been going to Phantom of the Attic in Pittsburgh for, again, to your point, 25 years.
It's a good store. I've been there.
Whether or not I was in the country or not, I would still have my pull list there. And so when he recommended it, I have like a budget, like $50. Once it's after 50, I got to get it in trade. And so that's the only reason. I love Tom King, but at the time we still had the Hickman stuff going on, which again, another side one, I will make that quick recommendation. Hickman's Doom one shot.
Oh yeah.
Fun. Very fun. But that's it I'm out of here. Thank you all for listening. As always, next week we'll be coming back at you with X2 X-Men United. And you'll find out if we enjoyed that opening scene 20 years later, as much as the OG version was. Spoilers, yes, probably. Is there any social medias you want to get out into the world, Brent or WH?
No, not really. You can follow me on Twitter at BC Nerdhole, but I don't tweet a heck of a lot anymore. It's a little bit of a hellscape over there, but beyond that, just the truenorthnerds.com is the best way to go.
I don't want people following me on Instagram.
Twitter currently has you with two wrestlers, one of which having their final wrestling match, both wearing your shirt.
That's
You're
right.
Not going to mention that at all.
Well, no, I am going to mention that because it's a great fucking show. It's Long and Winding Railroad, episode 43. We're talking about the classic match, Dan Crawford, Doug Furness, the Can-Am Express versus Tsuyoshi Kikuchi and the goat of all goats, Kenta Kobashi, from 1992, May 25th, 1992. So we did it pretty much on the anniversary of this match, and me and Daniel Makabe from out west, the west coast of Canada. He's on his retirement tour. One of the best technical wrestlers. It's a shame he's retiring, but hey, he's got to take care of his health and all that. So I'm going to see him in his last match in Toronto. He graciously found time, not only from getting married and being on his retirement tour, to review this match, which you can hear on this very network for free. What the fuck? You don't have to pay for that one. But go buy the fucking t-shirt that Eddie Kingston likes to fucking wear all the fucking time. Okay, both of them. They're both up there. Buy the hoodie, buy the t-shirt, buy the zip. I don't give a fuck. Just put money in my pocket, okay? You can chopped-tees.com, okay? But the Long and Wine Roll Road with Daniel Makabe is coming out this weekend. Just a couple of days after this is going to drop, thanks to our good friend, Wei Ting, who, by the way, we have secured his services for one of these reviews. Should we tell people
mystery. Week they show up, that the door opens and it's like the forbidden
you,
door.
You people can't imagine some of the people we got on. And guess what, if you're a freeloader, you're not going to hear it until you pay up.
This is not the way we wanted to ask you, that whether you wanted to get our double double, if you wanted to go with a full espresso or anything in between. We would welcome your business, and we would love to appreciate you here over at Post Wrestling. Additionally, not only do you get, when you pay up, stuff like MCU Later, you also get one of my favorite shows, Talk, which this month's episode of Talk, John and Wei have a delightful coffee, and they discuss the fact that they lament not seeing W.H. Park in person enough, even though they're in the same town with him, and they resolve to see more Park.
So I have to actually listen to this episode? Yeah. I'm just kidding. I always listen.
They're like, WH, man. I got to see that guy. And it's like,
I got to see my man Joe Poe, Cowboy Wei Ting, and Cal Ladd, Oscar Ting. Haven't seen them. Haven't seen that guy, that kid in a long time. Listen, I love those two guys. That's what you should too. And if you pay up, you'll fucking love them too.
I really need to hire WH to do ads for our Patreon.
Yeah. Just bring them in for like a 5-minute period and then wheel them out quick.
Hey, Brent, I don't do shit for free.
There it is.
I said pay.
Yeah, he said it. He opened with that.
You can match my t-shirt money. We'll talk. Sure.
Now that he has merch. Well, yeah, listen, you're going to have to talk to my mom now because she signed up to be the official MCU Later mom.
Your mom, a great woman, not only for giving us you into this terrible world, Rich Fan, but for also saying, I know where it's at. It's at MCU Later and Post Wrestling. Wei loved that picture, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. She messaged me and she's like, so what is this thing you sent me? I was like, Mom, I told you when we got it, that's for the show I do. And she's like, wait, you do this? I was like, yeah. She's like, I thought it was just like you just bought me something like when Trey has a hockey tournament and you pick up like one of the tournaments. So like, no, that's the show I do with my friend WH. Remember, guy who came down from Canada. And she's like, oh, wow. And then she's like, all right, get the off like phone. I hear her yelling at my dad, like, get the phone ready. I got to change. I got to model this because I'm going to be their official model. We're getting, getting a cut.
We love
it. So now she's taking half.
Hold the brakes there.
Hey, you already agreed. Brent was the witness. I'm sorry to tell you, WH.
It's coming out of your end.
Mama Fan is getting her cut. Yeah, it's coming out of my end. I already accept that. I'm going to be Gary Coleman. I accept it. But you can, if you enjoy the madness that I've been moderating today, you could always catch me here at Post Wrestling for MCU later. Additionally, over at Pro Wrestling Torch, you can catch me with my editor publisher there, Wade Keller, the Deep Dive with Rich Fan I do with Will Cooling, and all sorts of things when sleep evades me. But that's enough about us. Thank you for trying us out for free. I hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, if you've paid.
Well, if you paid, well, MCU later. If you're a cheapskate, maybe not.